Sad news yesterday, the death of that towering Egyptian feminist firebrand, Nawal el-Saadawi. In 2020, Time named her one of its 100 women of the year, and that was understating it. She spent decades as a pioneering doctor and director of public health for the Egyptian government. She was a writer who paid dearly for acts of bravery, facing harassment, death threats from religious fundamentalists and imprisonment. Her crime was to speak the truth about the lives of women, a female genital mutilation, which he also underwent, describing it as a tool used to oppress women. She was furious when her grandmother told her as a young girl that a boy is worth 15 girls at least. She died this week at the age of 89. Here's a part of a chat we had when she was in Sydney attending the Writers' Festival in 2002. Now, of course, sometimes writing was extremely difficult for you. There was a time in your life when you were writing on toilet paper with an eyebrow pencil given to you by a prostitute who was in prison with you.
Yes. This was in 1981 under Sadat when he put me in Karnataka prison. And, you know, it was terrible because it was every day the jailer comes to us and say, if I find a paper and pen in your cell, it's much more dangerous if I find a gun. And to me, what I'm going to do, you know, I cannot live 24 hours doing nothing except sitting on the ground like that. So I made arrangement with one of the prostitutes. You know, prostitutes were allowed toilet papers and television, and they were not afraid of them. But political prisoners, we were not allowed to have anything. No television, no radio, no newspaper, no paper, no pen. So I made arrangement with one of the prostitutes who used to come and bring us bread. I told her, can you get me some paper and pen? She said, okay, tomorrow. Next day, she brought me the toilet paper and her eyebrow pen. And I wrote all my memoirs, the whole book, memoirs from the women's prison, on this toilet paper with this small pen.
Nawal, does that extraordinary manuscript survive? Do you still have it?
Not the toilet paper. No. I smuggled it out. When I came out, I smuggled it out. And I tried to remember when I sat in my room at home to write the book, I used those toilet paper to remind me of what happened. But of course, they vanished.
Well, it's not as substantial as papyrus, is it? Now, what crime were you charged with? Why were you there?
Well, Sadat invented the crime. There was, of course, I did nothing. I was a medical doctor, a writer. He said, he blamed Nasser, you know, that Nasser was a dictator. And now Sadat is bringing democracy. So I believed him. I thought that there is democracy and opposition. So I started criticizing his policy. I find myself in prison. So I didn't approve of his policy. I didn't agree. So I wrote against that in the opposition papers, which were created by him and by the opposition parties. And he didn't like that. So he put all opposition leaders in prison.
Over the years, many people have gone to prison for their beliefs. And rather than destroying their beliefs, they have intensified in prison. That's what happened to you, didn't it?
Exactly. I felt I am right. And I was right in criticizing Sadat. It's very strange. Not everybody do that. Some people change, of course. But to me, I felt that there were many contradictions in what he was saying. And then you remember he was assassinated while I was in prison. And then the new president released us 2 months after the death of Sadat.
When you're in the US, you and your husband, Sharif, taught a course at university called Dissidence and Creativity. Mm-hmm. What's the connection between the two?
Well, there is a very, very big connection, because creativity, you cannot be creative unless you have this ability to criticize, you have this critical mind. And when you have this critical mind, you have to be dissident. You cannot be, you cannot follow the system. You cannot obey the rules, the rationale. You feel that you have different ideas and you want to express it. You find yourself that obliged to be a dissident in order to, because creativity means innovation. You have new ideas, and the society is settled with certain status quo, and you have to change this status quo.
Well, you once said that there's no difference in your life between writing and fighting. You've said that in your ideal world, there would be no established religion and no religious books. Mm-hmm. And you're very much against the idea of the fixed text. And when you say that, you're not simply referring to holy books, which you see as political in any case. You're talking about Freud or Marx or any other doctrine.
Yes, yes. Because I feel that, life is moving. And theory, philosophy, should be for life. Some people look to philosophy and thinking and theories as something academic to be put on the shelf. But I feel that philosophy and thinking should serve life and everyday life. There is no separation between philosophy and reality. So that's why I feel I am very much against any fixed verse, any fixed book. And book is dead to me. Even I sometimes don't like to read my books. It's something behind my back. I'm looking forward for a new book, new ideas. So holy books to me are finished. We have to change them. And so long we change them, so long human beings are able to reinterpret holy books, they are no more divine.
So books, instead of freeing us, can enslave us.
Exactly. And they do that.
Let's look at the textbooks of feminism. And I want to take your mind back to the years you spent in the US, because I know you believe that, to some extent, American women are blinded by what they see as the successes of feminism. You don't think that American women are free at all?
No, they are. Women, the oppression of women is universal, in fact. I am here in Australia, and I see that women here are not free. Women in the US are not free. Women in Egypt or in Sudan or in Asia or in Africa, because we are living in one world, not three or four, and we are dominated by one system, that's the capitalist patriarchal system. And in such a system, women cannot be really liberated, or even men. When you have such a class patriarchal system, people are oppressed by class. You have the very poor and the very rich. You have marriage system that make, up till now, there are women here in Australia and in the US, when they marry, they carry the husband name, In Egypt, we don't do that. I carry my name, El Saadawi. That's my father name. Of course, we should carry also the mother name. But part of patriarchy is that the mother name disappears in history. And this happens all over the world.
We've established earlier that you're troubled by the tendency of human beings to worship books and to turn beliefs into religions. Let's now look at a specific religion and your interesting relationship with Islam. You are you're very proud of it in many ways, but also very critical.
I am critical, in fact, of all religions, especially the three monotheistic religions. And I spent years comparing Judaism to Christianity to Islam, and comparing the three holy books, the Old Testament to the New Testament to the Quran. And I discovered that the Quran is much more liberal in relation to women than the Old Testament or the New Testament. But the problem is that there is some, you know, first of all, religion is a political ideology. And religion is used by politics. God is used by political power to justify injustices and to justify the class patriarchal system. And it's very difficult to separate religion from politics, even in Australia, even in the so-called Western democracies. There is always religion. Christianity, you know, the U.S. is a very Christian country, very Christian. And when they had this problem of the 11th September, etc., you cannot imagine how Christianity was so visible. George Bush himself is giving a lot of money to encourage Christian groups, and especially Christian fundamentalist groups.
Well, they give him a lot of money, of course, during election campaigns.
Yes.
And I don't think it's sufficiently understood how powerful Christian fundamentalism is in dictating U.S. foreign policy.
Yes, yes. And the other thing, the language of George Bush, the religious language of George Bush about the axis of evil, about God and the devil, etc., similar to the language, to the religious language of Osama bin Laden. So usually I say that Osama bin Laden and George Bush are two faces of the same coin. In fact, they need each other and they created each other. They work together and they fight. Sometimes they have conflict, etc., but they are two faces of the same coin.
The voice of Egyptian author and feminist Nawal al-Saadawi, who died this week, and that was a conversation we had 19 years ago.